This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Signature support is from First Financial Tax and Accounting Services. Your number is 877-217-5757. Email us at talk@talklouisiana.org. Much happening in our world, and on the show today, we are slated to visit with the great Louisianian Dr. Mike Robichaux. He was an all-conference performer at LSU in football, left school early with a year of eligibility left to go to med school, and he, for many years, ENT specialist in Braceland, and just retired, but he was a state senator as well, and he'll talk about the FDA approval, officially, of the vaccine for COVID-19. But before we get there, we're visiting with a legal scholar like few others, Dean Erwin Chemerinsky, one of the great law schools of America at the University of California, Berkeley. He is with us to talk about a few matters, but he has a book that is out and about that is pertinent about race in America. It's called Presumed Guilty, How the Supreme Court Empowered the Politics and Subverted Civil Rights. Good morning, Dean Chemerinsky.
Good morning. It's wonderful to talk with you.
It's nice to talk with you, and I presume you're in beautiful Berkeley, California today.
I am in Berkeley. In fact, I'm at my office, and I teach class in about an hour.
Wonderful that you're starting your day with us. It's 7:09 on the West Coast. But America, as we know, has many problems. Nothing new in our country. We're a country that has survived lots of things, but race is perhaps the most prevailing. I don't think there's any doubt it is the most prevailing issue of this time and previous times. And you address this in your book, and you believe the legal system, in particular, the highest court in the land, has basically fanned the flames. How so?
The Supreme Court throughout American history has failed to control the police. There are many constitutional provisions that are about limiting what the police can do, like the Fourth Amendment that limits who the police can stop and search. But instead, what the Supreme Court has done through its decisions is essentially make it possible for the police to stop anybody at any time. And what we know is that when the police have this discretion, it's used in a very racially based fashion.
You cite that police are 9 times more likely to kill African-American men than other Americans, and in fact, you note that nearly 1 in every 4,000 will die at the hands of an officer. Those are sobering statistics in a land that treasures freedom and equal rights, and it sounds like you're of the mind, as are most people in this country, that we have many roads to travel.
We certainly do, especially with regard to race. What I wanted to do in this book was talk about how the Supreme Court has contributed to race-based policing in the United States. It really isn't hyperbole to say that the police can stop anyone anytime they want, and that this is disproportionately used against people of color.
Now, there are cases that you cite, and many of these go back years. In fact, Terry versus Ohio, 1968, City of Los Angeles versus Lyons, 1983. It sounds as though you're saying no matter the composition of the court, and through the years the court has leaned conservative because of the fact that most justices in my lifetime, and that would include Dean Chemerinsky's lifetime, have been nominated and appointed by Republican presidents. But that aside, what are some of the cases that have caused this condition that you see is a real issue in our country?
Let me start with one you mentioned, City of Los Angeles versus Lyons, and I chose to begin the book with it. It involved a 24-year-old African-American man, Adolph Lyons, who was stopped one night for having a burnt-out taillight. The police officers ordered him out of his car. They slammed his hands above his head onto the roof of the car. He complained that the keys that he was holding were cutting the skin of his palm. The officer thought he was, quote, mouthing off, administered a chokehold on him. Literally, the officer put his forearm around Lyons' neck and squeezed till Lyons was unconscious. Lyons awoke. He had urinated and defecated. He was spitting blood and dirt. He was given a traffic citation for having a burnt-out taillight and allowed to go. He did some research, and he discovered, to that point, 16 people in Los Angeles, almost all like him, black men, had died from police use of the chokehold. He sued the City of Los Angeles for an injunction to stop officers from using the chokehold, except if necessary, check the officer's life for safety. The Supreme Court 5-4 ruled that Lyons could not sue for an injunction because he could not show that he personally was likely to be choked again in the future. The Supreme Court said, to sue for an injunction, you have to show it's going to happen to you in the future. No one can show that for the chokehold. That led to the death of Eric Garner and George Floyd and so many others with chokeholds because no court can stop them, even though they're unconstitutional if they're not necessary.
Why has the Supreme Court, these supposed great legal minds of men and women, why is the court on the whole, and we're talking about cases that were settled by less than majority votes, but nonetheless, the court as a whole has sanctioned this. Why?
I think you put your finger on it. The Supreme Court has been politically conservative through most of American history. There was a brief exception during the Warren Court. Not surprisingly, that was a time when the court imposed more limits on the police than ever before. We're all familiar with the warnings that police have to give when they question somebody in custody, so-called Miranda warnings. Well, that came from the Warren Court in 1966. I think we all want to live in a safe society, and I think the Supreme Court has decided that ensuring police discretion to provide greater safety is more important than protecting individual rights. But there's a cost to that. It's a cost to all of us, and especially a cost to people of color.
The book is Presumed Guilty from Dean Erwin Chemerinsky of the University of California, Berkeley, one of the great schools of law, and the subtitle, How the Supreme Court Empowered the Police and Subverted Civil Rights. 877-217-5757 and talk at talklouisiana.org. Hal in Monroe asked the question about how cameras have made it a new day, that video evidence is hard to argue with, certainly in the George Floyd case. If there had not been cameras, I doubt that the result would have been what it is with Officer Chauvin. But how have cameras changed, or is it still a case in which the high court leans conservative and you say black men in particular are getting a raw deal?
Cameras do make a difference, and I would focus on the body cams and dash cams that many police are required to wear. And what's interesting is often they are as much to the benefit of the police as they are to the victims of police abuse. There are many instances where people have accused the police of misconduct, but the footage from the body cam or the dash cam shows the police did nothing wrong. On the other hand, there are instances where they do show things were done wrong. One study has shown that all too often when police do something wrong, they turn off the body cam or the dash cam so there's no footage. Think about the example you mentioned, the death of George Floyd. Had a bystander not been there with a camera, I don't know the result would have been the same. It probably wouldn't have been in court.
877-217-5757. There is still time to get in with Dean Chemerinsky. The book is Presumed Guilty. Phil in Jefferson Terrace. Hi, Phil.
Hi, Jim. Yes, sir. I mean, the fact that you need to take a drug test to get a job is a gross violation of your Fourth Amendment rights. In fact, we've been giving our rights away for a long time, and it's not right.
All right. Well, that's a whole different issue, but I gather Phil is saying that there is discrimination in the legal system on other fronts.
Well, and the Supreme Court has said generally that the government can require its employees to submit to drug tests. And he's right in saying that there is a real Fourth Amendment issue there because it is a search of a person, and the Supreme Court has allowed it.
877-217-5757. Now, race in America is a prevailing issue all over our country, and Minnesota is a state, as we know, with a African-American population much lower on a percentage basis than is Louisiana. So is California, but is there any place in America where black people are immune from unequal justice?
Statistics would say the answer to that is no. Take New York City, and the statistics are in the book, and it's stunning how much police stop and frisk targeted black and also Latinx people. Long ago, Alexis de Tocqueville, in a famous book called Democracy in America in the early 19th century, said, race was the tragic flaw on which American democracy was founded. And we still have to deal with that. That's what the racial reckoning is about in 2020 and 2021.
877-217-5757 for Professor Erwin Chemerinsky. His book is Presumed Guilty. David in Atlanta. David, good morning. You're on with Dean Chemerinsky.
Good morning, gentlemen. You know, if white people had the same unemployment rate, the same income, and the same net worth that black people have, there would be some type of emergency program like the New Deal during the Great Depression to create jobs and other opportunities for people. And to me, that points to the racism of America.
All right. David in Atlanta says it goes much deeper than any kind of police action. But is the police action that you cite in your book, Presumed Guilty, is it a byproduct of many other issues in our country, Dean?
Of course it is. There's an enormous wealth gap. And I'm not saying that most police are racist. I don't believe most police are racist. I had the chance in doing a report to interview almost 100 police officers for it, and I was so impressed overall with the officers.
We're going to spend a bit more time after this 90-second timeout. This is Jim Engster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. Alondra Villarreal is producing, and he's spending a few more minutes with the Dean of the University of California School of Law, Dr. Erwin Chemerinsky. He was named president-elect of the Association of American Law Schools this year, and in 2017 named the most influential person in legal education in the United States by Jurist Magazine. His book is Presumed Guilty. And before we hit the break, I thought you made a point that is worth repeating and perhaps expounding on if you wish, but you're saying despite these concerns you have, in which black men are nine times more likely to be killed by police officers than anybody else, including black women, by the way, but despite those concerns, you believe most police officers, and I think it's a point that should be made, most police officers are good people, but you have a few bad apples, maybe more than a few in some cases, that taint everybody else.
Overwhelmingly, police officer people of good faith and who we really should admire. I was asked to do a report on the Los Angeles Police Department a number of years ago, and I interviewed about 100 officers. I was so impressed by the people I met and their dedication to helping people and protecting public safety. But there are occasionally racist officers, and also we all have implicit biases that affect what we do and how we perceive the world. And the statistics don't lie. They do show that when police have discretion, it's disproportionately used to the detriment of people of color.
877-217-5757 for Dean Chemerinsky. Dan, downtown. Dan, you're on with Erwin Chemerinsky.
Yes. Is there a problem with lower federal court judges, whether Democrat or Republican appointed, who, if located where there are red state senators, must carve out a conservative record to have any chance of promotion to a higher court?
All right. What about the politics of the federal court?
There's no doubt that ideology influences what judges do, and judges who are ambitious on a state trial court or a federal trial court might want to please presidents of their party. Judges on courts of appeals might want to please presidents of their party or governors of their party to get elevated to the higher court. There's actually been statistical studies done of that to try to document the extent to which trying out for a higher court influences judging behavior. It happens.
Stuart downtown. Stuart, you're on with Erwin Chemerinsky, author of Presumed Guilty. Hi, Stuart.
Jim, Dr. Chemerinsky in the audience. Jim, I'll ask that you not cut me off. Dr. Chemerinsky, respectfully, sir, I'd like to know, me and many other people of color would like to know what hallucinogenics you're on. As a gentleman of color, I can tell you, I have friends who are attorneys who are Caucasian, and they tell me that the system is contaminated, infected, and polluted with racism from judges, district attorneys. They call the police department's Blue Klux Klan. Sir, remember the how police agencies began running after the runaway slaves, and many police officers that me and my friends and associates run across. They are as racist and disgusting and disrespectful and lewd and as arrogant as they can be. Sir, you need to look at it from a person of color, particularly of African American.
All right. Is that possible for a white person like you or me to do that, Dr. Chemerinsky?
But I also don't disagree with the caller that there's racism in police departments. But I also believe that many of the police officers aren't overtly racist, but we all have implicit biases. So I don't think the caller and I disagree at all. I'm not minimizing racism in police departments. In fact, the whole thesis in my book is the way in which the Supreme Court has empowered racist policing.
Ray in Prairieville. Hi, Ray. You're on with Dean Chemerinsky.
Thanks for taking the call, Jim. And Dr. Chemerinsky, I was just reading in the National Geographic that race is not a valid terminology. That it's what they're talking about really is, and I think the same thing you're talking about, is skin color, skin appearance. And so in African-American is probably not race, but it's a black-skinned person.
All right. That's a topic for a whole other show, but I think you know where Ray in Prairieville was going. Obviously, we have prejudices as people, and the way people look often determines that, and certainly the hue of their skin often determines how we react in some cases, Dr. Chemerinsky.
That's exactly my point. I think what we have to look at is the extent to which policing is race-based in the United States. And one of the reasons for that is the Supreme Court.
Randy and Zachary. Hi, Randy.
Yes, I just want to make a comment about this has happened numerous times where the police have broke in to got the wrong address and broke into people's houses, and it's pretty sloppy police work.
All right. Does that happen more often to black people where wrong door raids, and sometimes, as we've seen, people get shot, killed when the cops are at the wrong place?
Yes, that happens. And I think one of the reforms that's been proposed in Congress that would be a good one would be to limit the ability of police to enter houses without knocking, announcing their presence. That's what led to the death of Breonna Taylor in Louisville, that the police came, they entered without knocking and announcing they were the police. A man in the house thought that there was a burglary, took out his gun, bullets were fired, and Breonna Taylor got killed by the crossfire. And Congress has proposed eliminating the ability of police to do that. It would be an important and a very laudable change with regard to policing.
Mike and Walker, you'll be our final caller for Dean Chemerinsky. Hi, Mike. Mike.
Hello?
Yes, you're on the air.
Okay. I was just wondering, since the original reason for so many police forces was to protect the good citizens from those people, how much of that influence has, still carried over from, from the formation of the police department?
All right. What about long-standing prejudices? Go ahead.
As I discuss in the book, and as one of the callers pointed out, the origin of police departments in many places in the United States was slave patrols. And the organized police departments, as we know them today, really didn't develop into the latter part of the 19th century. There is no doubt we need to have police, but we also need checks on the police. And what I'm trying to argue is the Supreme Court is the institution most responsible for that, but it hasn't done it.
All right. Jason in Jones Creek, he says, what are my rights, Dean Chemerinsky, regarding using my cell phone to record an encounter with a law enforcement officer?
The law is unclear about that right now, but I would say in most jurisdictions, if you're in a public place, you're allowed to record what's going on in public. But I can't tell you that that's so every place. There is some difference among the courts on that.
The book is presumed guilty. And lastly, a listener, and I would be remiss in not asking Dr. Chemerinsky about his editorial in last Thursday's New York Times about California's recall. The headline, California's recall is unconstitutional. Every voter should be able to influence the outcome of the election. Your point is that the way this is structured, it is highly unfair, you believe, to the incumbent, Gavin Newsom. Why?
Well, the way it's going to work is on September 14th, people will vote on two questions. One is whether to recall Gavin Newsom. And if so, second, which of the candidates who are listed should become governor? Imagine Gavin Newsom loses but gets 49% of the vote, which is certainly possible. The highest of the challengers right now is polling 18%. But the person with 18% will end up being governor, even though 49% want Newsom. And our argument is that's what's unconstitutional.
So this Larry Elder could end up becoming governor of California.
Right. Larry Elder right now is polling more than any other candidate at 18%. Gavin Newsom is ahead, and it looks like he's going to be able to withstand the recall. But if he loses, he's going to lose close. So imagine there were 10 million voters. 4.9 million want Gavin Newsom. 1.8 million want Larry Elder. Larry Elder's going to end up as the governor. That's what we say makes no sense and is unconstitutional.
Is there a road to appealing this?
I understand some lawsuits have already been filed on this theory. I'm not involved with those. And there's an easy solution. If Newsom is recalled, just make the lieutenant governor the new governor of the state.
Dean Chemerinsky, we'll let you get to class. Thank you for joining us. And the book is Presumed Guilty. Hopefully the first of a few visits with this fine gentleman and legal scholar. It's been a pleasure, sir.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
And we will return with Dr. Mike Robichaux, former state senator, on Talk Louisiana. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana, 877-217-5757. We're visiting with Dr. Michael R. Robichaux, Sr. He, of course, many remember, was a walk-on who became an all-conference defensive end on the LSU football team during the Charlie McClendon years, attended med school, honor graduate LSU med school, and for more than 30 years, he practiced as an ENT and country doctor south of here near Raceland, and he's co-founder of a good government group called the Alliance of Concerned Citizens. He served in the Louisiana Senate for 5 years, becoming a champion of the environment and working class citizens, and surviving a jihad from Governor Mike Foster, who didn't like him a lot. But he is here with us, and if you'd like to talk to this exceptional man, Dr. Mike Robichaux, 877-217-5757. Good morning, Doc.
Morning, Jim.
Well, today, the headline in most newspapers, including the one of record, the New York Times, the Food and Drug Administration, has appointed full approval to Pfizer-BioNTech's coronavirus vaccine for people 16 and older, a decision that is considered likely to set off a cascade of vaccine requirements by hospitals, colleges and universities, corporations and other organizations. Your thoughts about the significance of this, if any? Is this window dressing or is it the real deal?
No, I think this is going to give people that are really conscientious about the need for us getting out of this pandemic to be able to do so. You know, the statistics on death from receiving the vaccine, which is the only way we know for certain that we can clear this problem, is astronomically small. It's less than 1 in 100,000 people that actually die from the vaccine itself, from taking it. And yet we've got percentage rates of up to 7% in Italy, I think it was. Seven out of every 100 people that acquire this died from the disease. Our deaths were obviously considerably lower. So anyway, I think it's a good thing. I know that's going to be a controversial comment, but it's certainly something that I've thought about long and hard over the last few years since this problem began.
In the view of some of us, much more controversial to say it's not a good thing, but as you know, about half the people in our country to this point have thought it's not good enough to get. And some have been saying, I'll do it when the FDA approves it. Well, the FDA has approved it. Let's see what happens. But as you know, opinions are hard to change. And for whatever reason, this one has been tinged with political consequences. Even Trump was booed the other night when he implored people to get vaccinated. What is going on with this anti-vax sentiment that prevails in this part of the country, even more so than others? What do you think?
I have a daughter who's a clinical psychologist, and I've asked her to help me with understanding the mindset of people who refuse to change their positions on these things. And there's a phenomenon called folie à deux, in which people are followers, and it's a tribe. I guess it's related to a tribe mentality or something of that nature. And it's something that's characteristic of the human race. It's nothing that's new. Nothing that's exotic. It's things, and we've got certain people who are trained in being able to manipulate those sensations that we have, these weaknesses, I'm going to call it, in our personalities, and they have done so remarkably well in that they've got people frightened of something that is really very, very, very useful. It is interesting that people are advocating using things that have been proven to not be effective as opposed to taking things that have been proven effective.
Such as, when you say not effective, but that people are attracted to, what are some of the things people are doing in lieu of vaccinations?
Yes, well, as we've read recently, the ivermectin is a medicine that is used to treat worms, primarily in this country, and horses and cattle. And people are going to the feed stores and getting ivermectin and getting sick. It's been the responsible for more calls to the infectious disease, not infectious disease, but the groups that accept calls on toxic problems and so forth than anything else. So they are being besieged by that. And then we've got the hydroxychloroquine, which is interesting because both of these medicines, the hydroxychloroquine, is used to treat a parasitic disorder, whereas the ivermectin is used to treat a parasitic disorder. And both of them have been not shown but proven to not be effective and not to be useful in managing these problems. So, you know, we have to rely on expert opinions, and everybody's entitled to their own opinion on things. But when their opinions are given such weight and such significance, when they don't really deserve that kind of significance, it really makes life tough for the rest of the world to deal with these problems.
The approval from the FDA on the Pfizer vaccine came as the nation fights against the pandemic. The highly infectious Delta variant has bit deeply into the progress that our country had over the first half of this year, and the Biden administration, as the New York Times reports today, hopes the development will motivate at least some of the roughly 85 million Americans who are eligible for shots but have so far rejected them to change their minds. 877-217-5757 for Dr. Mike Robichaux. Craig in Natchitoches. Hi, Craig. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Yeah, good morning, gentlemen. Two questions. One, how much do you think right-wing news media has affected people not wanting to get the vaccines? And two, do you think even more people will start getting them when Moderna gets approved? And do you have any idea how long that will be?
All right.
Well, I'm certainly – excuse me.
Go ahead.
I'm certainly not an authority on any of these areas. I was retired by COVID, and when it first came out, I was more or less forced to retire. So I have not been managing the problems. But excuse me, go ahead, John.
No. What about right-wing media? Are these...
Well, there's no question that Fox News and some of the other liberal channels have...
Conservative channels, I think. Go ahead.
Excuse me. Some of the conservative media have enhanced the position that the vaccinations are dangerous and encouraged people not to do these things. And it enhanced the position of these ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine and so forth in management of these disorders. So it's, I think it played a significant role. And I'm so disappointed that people believe these things. I have a friend of mine who stopped by recently, and I don't want to say too much about it because it's got some area of confidentiality on my part. But anyway, he wanted me to give him a prescription for the ivermectin just in case. He and his wife are scared out of their wits about the prospects of of contracting COVID, and they wear masks everywhere they go, and they do this, that, and other thing. But they're also not believing that the injections are the way to go. They're frightened of the injections, whereas injections have been so extraordinarily effective and so extraordinarily safe that it's unbelievable. And he's just getting his information from wrong sources. He says, Mike, I read on this all the time. Well, the sources he's reading are obviously sources that are not that are biased in the wrong direction.
877-217-5757 to get in with Dr. Mike Robichaux, former state senator. A listener also notes that his 10 years in military service should also be noted, and he was an all-defensive end, a walk-on at LSU, and an all-conference selection during the Charlie Mack years. Quite a renaissance man who for 30 years worked 7 days a week. And I'm not exaggerating. You kept your office open on holidays, didn't you? Even on Christmas Day, you could see Dr. Mike.
That was the way I practiced. That was what I was destined to be.
What about vaccines? A listener asks, preventing people who get COVID after they've been vaccinated from having deathly effects of it. It seems that the people who are vaccinated are recovering more. At least that's my impression. Is that a correct impression?
I'm not altogether certain of the question, but people that have had the illness, it's recommended at a certain time after a certain interval after the infection that they get the vaccination, okay? But the vaccinations themselves are amazingly safe. Now, the Johnson & Johnson vaccine has had some problems, and I think they've actually repealed their approval of the vaccine. So I don't know that that's still being used. But the Johnson & Johnson mm-hmm. advantage was that it didn't have to be refrigerated, and it was only one dose, but it did cause some other problems. So, I'm not an authority
right.
on that.
But if I'm vaccinated, which I am, and I get COVID, which three of the people in our office did after being vaccinated, they're all back. They all came back. Are my chances of recovery better if I've been vaccinated?
Oh, 1,000% better. They're just, you know, the data shows that you and your people and myself and so forth will be very, very safe, even if we do contract it.
877-217-5757 and talk at talklouisiana.org. It will be easier to be interesting to see what happens with LSU and Southern and other universities. So will vaccines now be a requirement based on the fact that there has been FDA approval of the Pfizer vaccine? We'll talk more with Dr. Mike Robichaux and return to the phone lines. Again, your number 877-217-5757. Email us at talk@talklouisiana.org, and we return after this 2-minute pause. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Alondra Villarreal producing, and your number is 877-217-5757. A bit more time with Dr. Mike Robichaux, former LSU football great and former state senator. He is at our service. Let's go to Jim and Walker. Jim, you're on. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, Dr. Robichaux. One of the things that has become really apparent is that the anti-vaccination movement throughout the Bible Belt is directly tied to conservative evangelical Christianity. And it's just become a matter of dogma as opposed to making, you know, intelligent medical decisions.
What about dogma over science, Dr. Robichaux?
Well, this is an area I'm not sure I should delve in. But I feel very strongly about that, and that to think that Jesus would support policies which result in death versus life and happiness, and supporting the things that are healthy for an environment in so many different ways is unbelievable. And how churches can accept that role to support non-helpful things for people is just beyond me. I'm afraid to get into it because I get a bit emotional about it. But it's it's one of the things that really gets under my skin when I hear and see these things. And I have, you know, we all have family members that that believe differently than we do, and they have stronger beliefs in one area than another. But to come from it from the religious side and say that I don't approve of this because Jesus would or God would support me not getting a shot, it just defies all logic and so forth. So your point is well made with this particular person.
Johnny downtown asks, what would you say, Dr. Robichaud, to those who are relying on natural immunity after recovering from COVID instead of getting vaccinated? They're saying, I've got antibodies, I'm okay. Is that a good move?
I think not. Data, you know, we're accumulating data as time goes on. And we know now that antibody titers are going down even with the vaccinations. So this happens with the flus and it happens with everything else. So this is nothing new. And they've just improved the booster shot for the Pfizer vaccine and other vaccines as far as that goes. So I'm excited about that. My family felt so strongly about injections. Two of my children flew 16,000 miles to get injections at the beginning of this. They flew to their tribal, my daughter-in-law's tribe in Idaho, 2,000-mile trip. Back and forth twice. That was 16,000 miles. That's how strongly we felt about it. My wife was prepared to do the same thing, but she wound up getting a shot a couple of miles from where she was born. But we felt very strongly about it, and that's how much we felt it was important for us to do these things.
Patrick in Innisfail Estates. Hi, Patrick. You're on with Dr. Mike Robichaud.
Hey, you guys keep slamming the conservative movement, but it was the Trump administration that got us the vaccine in like 9 months. That's pretty good. And I know back in February they said probably 30% of people were already immune to COVID. Now you got a little more than half the American population that has had the second dose of the vaccine. I mean, we should be at herd immunity, which is around 70%. That's what we, you know, why do they keep hiring the bar, you know? And we, you know, we shouldn't have to keep wearing masks. We shouldn't have to keep suspending our civil rights and civil liberty. I think it's time to move on. You know, you're never going to get 0% COVID infection, you know?
All right. What about what Patrick says, the bar being moved? Has it been moved, or we still need more people to get to herd immunity, don't we? More people vaccinated.
We've got this new Delta variant, and the Delta variant developed because we did not have enough people that had reached herd immunity. We're going to wind up having a beyond Delta bug that's going to come out because it's a survival of the fittest, and these viruses develop resistant. You may have one out of a zillion viruses that becomes as a resistant one, and if it propagates, then you have a whole nother wave of things. So this new Delta virus is something that's entirely different, and it's something we have to live with. It's a dynamic process. It's not a static process. And so yesterday's statistics, and of course there's three types of lies in the world, lies, damn lies, and statistics, and you can play any kind of games you want with it. Both sides can play the games as far as that goes. So I've got many conservative friends and so forth, and we choose to believe differently, but I certainly am solid in my position on where I feel about injections.
Leonard on Airline, you're on with Senator Robichaud. Hi, Leonard.
Hey, Jim. Hey, Dr. Mike. They just gave Trump, like Trump was supposed to be the one came out with the vaccine, but Trump was the one that caused the pandemic, and that's the problem. We started listening to conservatives.
All right, well, you were going to say something. Thank you, Leonard. I think both Leonard and Patrick may be right. Trump certainly helped get the vaccine. He deserves credit, but he also did some terrible things during the pandemic when he was president. In fact, at one point suggesting that people should inject themselves with bleach. But your thoughts?
Well, some of the stuff was obviously done without any forethought, but that was pretty typical of the former president. We had two brilliant scientists that won Nobel Prizes for the creation of the vaccine that we're using. It's a messenger RNA vaccine. And there was Jennifer Doudna and Emmanuel Charpentier that won the Nobel Prize for this. And this new vaccine is just a phenomenal thing, and it's not using, somebody asked me recently, well, they're using a disabled vaccine. No, that's not what they use with this. It's a completely new technology. Mm-hmm. They've taken a little snippet of the DNA of the virus, and they've put it into a vaccine, and now your body is making antibodies against something that's could possibly be deadly for you. The previous way you did it, you took a viral particle that was or a virus that was not harmful, and you and you use that to cause your body to produce it. But this in no way introduces the virus into your system, in case there's others that have made that accusation, and you might have heard that.
Lastly, a question from John in New Roads asking about the fact that it does appear that people who are overweight are much more vulnerable to COVID. Independent of the vaccine, would it be better if we as a people were in better shape, Dr. Mike?
Well, that's certainly the case for most of the world. We know that obesity is one of our enemies. If for nothing else, for your musculoskeletal system. You know, when I see people that, when I was in my practice and I had people in their 30s and 40s and 50s and so forth, and they were overweight, I'd get on them pretty much, not because of the cardiovascular effects, which are certainly there, but the fact that by the time they get to be in their 50s and 60s and 70s, they're going to be crippled and unable to walk and unable to live normal lives after that point. So certainly weight control is plays a huge role in our health issues, and the more we can control those things, the better off we'll be.
Thank you, Dr. Mike Robichaux. We'll be calling again. It's always good to get your view of the world.
Thank you, Jim. Thank you, callers.
Thank you. And before we part, we do want to note that great American Congressman Glenn Clay Higgins of Lafayette is 60 years old today. Happy birthday, Congressman Higgins. And last night, the Saints held on preseason game, beating Jacksonville 23-21 in the Superdome. One of those not in attendance was Congressman Higgins.
Ever since I was a kid, the beginning of football season was something I really looked forward to. I'm telling you, it was a joyous time of the year. Finally, August had arrived. The preseason would begin. Teams would take shape, hoping my New Orleans Saints would be born again. It was just a beautiful, very American thing. No matter what was going on in the world or something in my own life, the NFL was there. American professional football was pure and real and badass and patriotic. Now, I just don't watch the NFL anymore. To see these guys that make millions of dollars kneeling or sitting down during our national anthem is sickening to me. To watch them disrespect every veteran and every solid American patriot, to insult the memory of Americans who have fought and sacrificed or given life or limb beneath the glory of our flag, to watch the weakness that the NFL has allowed itself to become. It's just heartbreaking to me, man. And it pisses me off.
There you go. Congressman Clay Higgins, happy birthday, number 60. Signature support for Talk Louisiana is from First Financial Tax and Accounting Services. Have a great day. Back tomorrow with Cleo Fields to start. Until then, stay safe and stay tuned.